Hello, netizens. Before we begin today, I just want to thank Raymond Gardner for being our latest patron over at patreon.com/wordsalad. Coincidentally, Ray is our guest today talking about Die Hard with a Vengeance, which turned out to be a really fun episode, just like any time Ray's on. So I hope you enjoy. I hope you will follow Ray's lead and consider helping us out on Patreon. But before all that, I hope you listen to this week's episode and enjoy. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to Quote Unquote Guilty, the only guilty pleasure podcast with air quotes in the title. I'm your host, Joe Ketchum, and I'm joined today once again by Ray Gardner.
Hello, listeners, gentle listeners.
Oh, God, listen to that voice.
I know. I try the dulcet tones.
That today. Soothing black voice.
Magic black?
Magic black voice. Yeah. Yippee-ki-yay, Ray. Welcome back.
Yippee-ki-yay indeed. I think we are doing this time the movie that was initially proposed. When you invited me to be a guest.
Yeah, I think when I first brought it up to you, you were like, Die Hard with a Vengeance. And I was like, well, we should do Die Hard 2 first. And then somehow we got on Last Action Hero before that even.
Yeah, because it was lesser known and more of a literal guilty pleasure for me.
Yeah, I think I needed more convincing to do Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, this was actually a joy.
Because it's fairly well-loved and fairly amazing. I didn't look up the Rotten Tomatoes score, but I imagine it's comparable to the first Die Hard.
I'm pretty sure I saw 51% critics, about 86% audience.
51 critics is low, man. Like, yeah, give it some... I mean, I get it that it's a genre movie, but fuck. It's
they graded
fantastic.
Die Hard movies harshly, I guess I should say.
Bastards.
Yeah, the nerve.
I was thinking about it. I think this is my favorite Die Hard movie.
Without a doubt. As the first movie is stronger and a better movie.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of other similar third movies that are my favorite, but only because they build so well on the previous movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The first one in particular, like Last Crusade, is the best Indiana Jones movie.
I like that one.
Thanks to Temple of Doom being fucking terrible.
I actually like Temple of Doom. I will not sit here for this kind of slander. You call him Dr. Jones.
It's really, really bad. No Time for Hanky Panky. No, wait, what is it? No Time for Love.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is also really good.
Yeah, I'm not as big a fan of that
one.
Right.
Wait, you don't like Dream Warriors?
Yeah, that's the... it's really for me that Freddy Krueger can't even manage to kill Patricia Arquette. That's weird to me.
This interview's over.
I haven't watched it in years. I've never seen the first two Freddy movies.
Really?
Yeah, I've only seen
the whole set on
3 and New Nightmare and Freddy vs. Jason.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, maybe that's why.
Yeah,
you get a pass.
So at some point, I'll watch them. I'm kind of waiting for them to like put the collection on Vudu for like $1, and then I'll just blow through them all.
I have the whole DVD set, if you don't mind watching DVDs on the projector.
I don't mind watching DVDs.
And the set I have even include 3D glasses for the sixth movie.
Okay.
The ending, Freddy's Dead. Got that all locked in there. And the bonus disc with tons of shit. Not to get too far off topic here.
Yeah, I was trying to think of other third movies I like. Toy Story 3 is the best of the three.
I have to watch those again. I haven't seen it in years.
I came up with another. Oh, Rocky 3. Rocky 3 is one of my favorite movies. I think we talk about
we
it like
did
every
talk
time.
About that. Yeah. I can't get over cartoon character Clubber Lang and Rocky himself, I thought was just out of character. I do like the movie, so I'm not ragging on it.
No, I think just structurally it's so strong. Like having Apollo train him after Mickey dies. Mm-hmm. Fucking awesome movie. But yeah, Die Hard with a Vengeance is such a blast.
A complete blast. From the beginning, I was smiling when the credits started today. Mm-hmm. There's no credits at all. There's just the title. And it slams on the screen with the vengeance. Like, fuck you, we're starting.
and then it has that like, hey now, yes. Summer in the city.
Back of my neck and dirt and gritty. I seen that shit every time. Every time. Walking on the sidewalk hotter than a match head.
Great song.
Oh my God.
That'll probably be our outro now.
Yeah, and then it just blows up. Bond with Teller blows up, and immediately the movie starts.
Yeah, because, it's just shots of New York in the summer, and then boom, bomb goes off in a department store, mass hysteria, dogs and cats living together.
Yes.
Should say there's plenty of third movies that are not the best in the series, Ghostbusters being one.
Well, that's a point of contention for the both of us. I want to start a fight again.
How about X-Men 3?
That one's universal. X-Men Apocalypse. I can rock with that one. Apocalypse bad. Last Stand is pretty bad. What other? There's not a whole lot. Lethal Weapon 3 is not that great.
But Lethal Weapon 3 is really bad. I just rewatched it a couple years ago. I was like, I remember liking all of these. 3 is terrible.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
They phone in a lot. And 4 is racist as fuck. We got to do that one of these days. And when I rewatched it.
Is it? Because I enjoy 4.
It's so racist against Asians. It was hilarious. When I saw it in theaters in 98, it was great. It was favorites. And then I think I might have caught some of it on TV, you know, years later.
I like Lethal Weapon 4, so that'll be a good one.
Yeah, we got to attack that. I'm glad we brought that up because it's been on my mind for a minute.
I'm getting a phone call from Vietnam.
Oh, how nice.
Hang on, I feel like I should answer it.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hope nobody's in distress.
Hello, Vietnam. Are you there?
Caller, you are on the line with Joe and Ray.
Oh, that's so weird. It's actually a call from that clinic in Wisconsin I've done studies at. So,
but it shows up from Vietnam.
Yeah, it said Vietnam.
They're masking their numbers. This study is going to kill some people. They don't want to trail.
They're into some shady shit in Wisconsin right now. They are. Fucking red states.
It's a fucking meth study.
I mean, everywhere's a red state now, so I mean.
Blood on everybody's hands with this one.
Yep.
President Baby Dick, the preschool president. You can leave that part in. The world must know our rage.
Absolutely. Well, we should talk about Die Hard with a Vengeance, though.
Yeah. Speaking of rage, you know, the bomb goes off and we immediately get introduced to the people in the PD before McClane shows up.
Yeah,
I liked that.
Our, like, captain.
Mm-hmm. Walter.
Walter. Walter. I was like, Cobb. I already can't remember his name. Yeah. And then there's another guy.
Lambert. Well, he's the Native American guy who's doing a lot of stuff.
But they say his first Kowalski. Name a lot. I can't remember his name. I don't know. I am suddenly so bad at this.
I know. I remember
John McClane, and I remember Zeus.
Mm-hmm. Kowalski was the lady. She had kind of a fake New York accent, but it's okay. Colleen Camp. Charlie, the bomb expert. He doesn't come in until later.
Charlie's great. We'll have to talk about Charlie.
I like all those side characters. Yeah. I wrote that in here, man.
Yeah, because even Walter's not a dipshit. He's very capable.
He's not Carmine Lorenzo from Die Hard 2.
No, he's absolutely not. Yeah.
He's the total opposite of that, while also having a lot of points of contention with McClane. You know, you can tell there's bad blood there. But he pitches in and gets the job done.
Yeah, because McClane really takes a lot of joy in him needing him.
Uh-huh.
A whole lot. Simon calls him up on the phone in the hysteria after the bombing and tells him this riddle that I've never been able to follow. He like does this nursery rhyme.
And I had two pigeons, bright and gay, fly from me.
Yeah. And I was like, is McClane there? He's like, no, he's on suspension. Like, no, he Walter. Is not, he's not Walter.
And speaking of joy, like I was saying before we started recording, I literally say these lines around the same time the characters do. That's how many times I've seen this movie. No, Walter, he's not. It's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, I will watch this one without watching the rest of the series. I just like sometimes I just feel in the mood to watch Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yes,
it's more than Die Hard or Die Hard 4, which I also really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched Die Hard 2 the least, but yeah, I
think
it.
That's fair.
And Die Hard 5, I've only seen
abortion.
One time. Yeah,
I've only seen it once.
Absolutely terrible movie.
Yeah,
useless.
What Die Hard 5?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Die Hard in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Okay, I can dig that one.
But I remember like one time I was sick and I couldn't sleep and it was like 4 a.m. and I got up and I was like, I'm going to watch something. And I threw in Die Hard with a Vengeance and I was like, that sounds like fun. It's going to make me feel better.
Release some endorphins.
Absolutely.
That'll put you down.
And I was just riveted as
I love,
always.
Because of some of my notes. I mean, I love that McClane is in terrible shape because by the time we get reintroduced to him, number one, the shots from New York, I guess, are to show you, you know, we're not in L.A., we're not in D.C., we're back home. McClane is shit right now when we see him. But one thing I noticed about that scene where they introduce him, all the foreshadowing and the planting in this movie still works really well for me. You know, they talk about the lotto, Ricky still play your badge number, and he's like 6991 every time, and all the cops know it. And
they talk about the theft of the 14 dump trucks.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of. The 14
into play
dump trucks.
Later, yep.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, structurally, this movie is amazing.
It's really well
done.
It's
so strong.
And like I mentioned in our Die Hard 2 recording, you know, it was based on an unrelated script called Simon Says.
Yeah.
From the writer Jonathan Hensley. I don't know if he's written anything lately, but I know he had some sort of credit on Armageddon 2. He's written some other movies that I think I liked. Besides Armageddon. don't want to imply anything there, but it's structurally really well done, and we don't even see the villain until way later in the movie.
I mean, it's that scene in particular is so great because it feels like banter. It feels like them just shooting the shit, which it should be avoided in screenwriting. And then when everything comes into play later on, where it's all connected, you're like, fuck, yes.
And it's bringing you up to speed on how fucked up John's life is now.
Yeah.
He's hungover. He's taking aspirin.
He's had a bad fucking headache all day.
He's got a bad fucking hangover all day long. And
you got any aspirin? Check that glove compartment. See if they got any aspirin.
Yeah. And he's just popping them. No water, no nothing. That's when you know you're a seasoned fuck up, when you start taking pure aspirin. Because I've tried that a couple times for toothaches and stuff. It is the worst.
It would be one thing if he like chews it.
I think he did. Did he even chew it or all?
I think he just swallows them whole.
Oh my God.
But it would be funny to me if he chewed them to like break down the time release.
Yeah. Well, he has a stronger esophagus than most after all years of chug-a-lugging, you know what I mean? So he can just pop them right down. And, you know, so they bring him up to speed. They don't tell us what's going on in the back of the van yet.
No.
We just know John has to do something.
Yeah. He has to go to Harlem at this particular time. And then he has to be naked.
Yeah.
And wearing a sandwich board.
And backup's like 4 blocks away or something like that.
Ten blocks.
Okay, lovely.
It's 10 fucking blocks away.
Lovely. So
I'll be back in 15 minutes. Like, don't take your time. I'm going to be dead in 4.
It's so quotable. One of the scenes that I didn't care for too much. I mean, not the scene, but just part of the scene. Zeus's intro with the kids.
Okay.
What didn't I love about that? I didn't like.
I think it's pretty great, so I'm interested.
I liked it more before, but you know, some of it feels a little white guy writery because black people don't sit around saying, "Oh, we don't want white folks to help us," but or the kid. I think it's the part when he says, "What do we want?" And the kid says, "To get respect." And if you see it in the captions, he's like, "No respect." And I'm like, "Oh, come on, people don't. They're not morons."
But, I didn't hear him correct it. I thought he just said to get respect.
No, he said respect.
I like that exchange, though. I didn't write it all down. It was like, where are you going? School. Why? To get an education. And why is that important? So we can go to college. Why is that important? To get respect. And who's going to respect you? No one.
So who's going to respect? Or no, I said, who's going to help you?
Yeah.
And they said, no one.
We're going to help ourselves. And who do we not want to help us? White people.
Yeah. And I guess some necessary context for the movie itself is, I mean, it came out in 1995. So it was only 3 years outside of the Rodney King riots. So, you know, everything's all fraught and racial tension. Hollywood has...
Which they mentioned the Rodney King attack.
Uh-huh, they sure did.
It's like, I was in L.A. a few years ago. Let me guess, Rodney King, fuck you.
Fuck you. It is like...
I was throwing a German bandit out of a window, asshole.
Yeah. It's like Hollywood does have that tendency to kind of to get topical a few years late, you know, because things go under. And so...
I mean, yeah, because, you know, things... The go into production and
and so it does have a little bit of edge, but it's kind of a Hollywood edge on race. But a couple of notes strike me as false nowadays, but only because it's that type of view that you see in conservatism a lot of days or nowadays, that blacks are the real racists, or that I didn't oppress you. You remember that kind of thing?
Yeah,
people say that. So there's a lot of that in there. It's not offensive, but it's a little bit tone deaf. It falls just a little bit flat, and that's, I guess you just chalk it up to the fact that, you know, a person of color didn't actually write the movie. So there's a little bit of wish fulfillment in there of McClane calling Zeus a racist, because Lord knows we know now. White conservatives love to call black people racist. I have those kinds of arguments on Facebook all the time because they don't understand the difference between prejudice and racism.
Well, it's how white people justify their racism. It's like, well, they're
there
racist against
there
us.
There you go. It's projection.
Like, yeah, we fucking have it coming. So let's just tone it down a bit.
It's the real racist. It's reverse discrimination.
Yeah,
it's affirmative action. All that shit.
Yep.
So there's the slightest bit of that in there, but it doesn't overpower the movie in any way.
I mean, Zeus is a really interesting, complicated character, though, because even though he inherently doesn't trust white people, he is racist against white people.
He's still prejudiced.
He still steps in to try and save this guy. And he says later, like, I stopped a white cop from getting killed. He doesn't know he's a cop until, you know, he has already interceded.
But yes, he steps up and does the right thing right away. The reveal in that scene, though, is one of my favorite things ever. Other parts of that scene, like I was saying about the falling flat, some of the hood guys are Hollywood hood, a little too hood for me. You know, the malt liquor, the do-rag.
Yeah.
Booyaka his ass, you know? Oh, man, it's like, come on.
What the fuck?
That is my favorite quote in that movie right there. We wait every time. I have my cousin. I show this movie to people. And you can just see him in the background. And he's like, when these people see you, they will kill you. And then as soon as he says it, the guy says, what the fuck? And we start laughing every time. And then the music starts with that little doom, doom,
doom, doom, doom, doom, doom, doom, doom. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Because it's over. Because that's, you know. well, the fact that, you know, you got this marauding gang. Well, it sort of feels like, again, sort of the type of stuff that white folks fear. That's why the scene is so powerful, like even now, because mm-hmm. it's so fraught and it's tense. And the guy literally has a sign saying, "I hate niggas." He turns around and it's there. The Fox version says, "I hate everybody," when that's on regular TV. So that doesn't work at all.
Oh, on TV, of course it would be.
They should have just said black or something, because "I hate everybody."
I hate blacks. Yeah, I hate Negroes. I mean, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he turns around.
Please don't edit me saying that out of my own podcast and use it against me.
Yeah, N-words. Yeah, I hate N-words. That's such a juvenile way to handle it, by the way.
I mean, even just like blurring out the like N and then a blur, it would get what it is. And yeah.
Well, actually, that goes back to something I mentioned in, I think maybe Last Action Hero or Die Hard 2. The fact that Americans love everything sanitized is part of the fairy tale.
Yeah.
So when you see stuff on network TV, it can't be presented the way it was. It has to be sanitized or what's that other good word? I like those good 10-cent words, bowdlerized or whatever.
I don't know what that word is.
Yeah, it's a guy named Bowdler. He's like big on censorship. Some shit. It's been a while. But basically, it means to water something down or to sand off all the edges or anything that's objectionable. And so, you know, so we got to cut out profanity. We know that already. But like you said, I mean, bleeping or maybe blurring it out for some reason is not the first go-to, I guess. They would rather pretend it's not there. You know what I mean? So motherfucker change becomes it. Mr. Falcon. Yeah.
Don't censor it. Change it.
Right. It's completely changed. And so it's not even, it's no longer unpleasant at that point. And that's something they do.
It's better. Like there was a push, oh God, like 5-10 years ago now, maybe not that quite that long, to not remove Huckleberry Finn from schools, but to replace every instance of the word.
Yeah, I remember that.
With slave.
Yes.
Yeah, so it wasn't.
And you see a lot of that shit nowadays, period. Like, there's some textbooks down in Texas. A black mom had to go at the school board about this. They called the slaves immigrants. So, they were immigrants.
Oh, my God.
And they were workers. And they, so the whole slave trade had been softened to immigrants who came over here for a better life and worked for free. And I mean, this is in 2014, 15. Yeah, motherfuckers will rewrite history here because reality is so hard to accept.
I mean, these are really embarrassing centuries in our history.
And so people got to clean it up. So I don't know. Christ. It's part of our national psyche. You know, we have to see our best selves every time.
Yeah.
And as far as race relations goes, sometimes I wonder if black people, their existence itself is a ugly reminder of the past. And so people treat it, you know, treat you with a little bit extra aggression or fear.
Yeah, it really holds the mirror up to the rest of
us. The mirror. I use exactly that all the time.
Yeah.
And I say my political rants are like holding up the mirror, and we're not doing that because I had a guy who's a liberal white guy. He popped up on Facebook about a post I made, and he says, well, not all white people, of course. And I'm like, dude, no discussion about race indicts all white people.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? It doesn't need to be said. It shouldn't need to be said. So I'm like, come on. You know, you should give us a little bit
more credit. Of course not all white people. Of course not all black people. Not all Muslims. Not all,
Not all nothing. Plenty of assholes, though. All assholes.
Yeah. Every group has assholes. Let's just all agree to that.
And so it kind of brings it back to that scene, because I mentioned before my old supervisor who was definitely afraid to get out of her car if she saw a random guy walk past her the job. She was staying there for 15 minutes and then get out. So that scene was kind of crazy to me. These people come over out for blood or whatever. But it's still a great scene. It works real well.
Yeah.
Like Bellevue, and then Bruce goes into the "I am the voice of my own head" or some shit. Mm-hmm. And
you know, this is Harlem in the 90s, and it's changed a lot in the last 20 years.
It sure has. And I've never even been to Harlem, but it's changed a ton.
No, but you just hear about how kind of progressed and commercial developed it's become, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Or gentrified or
gentrified,
something like that.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
It's funny, though. In my notes, I actually wrote down "what the fuck" in all caps. It's one of my favorite quotes in the movie. The movie is full of quotes. And then, you know, they attack McClane and they get in the cab, get down to Police Plaza. There's a great scene there when Simon calls in and all the cops are around, plus McClane.
Yeah.
I love every McClane's bit of
that. Tormenting him on the phone.
And then Zeus gets on the phone. He says, where's the Samaritan? I went through a very, you interfere with a very well-laid plan. Well, you can take your well-laid plan and shove it up your well-laid ass.
And, that was unpleasant.
Yeah.
Don't let it happen again.
So what's your name, boy? And then I like how Walter, the exposition there, you can really tell that he and McClane don't get along. Because you get that he means what he says.
Yeah.
To a certain degree. He's not saying it to antagonize in that moment, but he's saying this because he thinks he can de-escalate Simon a bit. And toilet bug, I mean,
That's... Yeah, he's basically trying to get McClane off the hook and saying, like, look, he's not worth it. And even if he was, this is not his best day. Like, you don't want to go toe-to-toe with a hungover John McClane. What's the fun in that?
He said he's two
he's
steps
got a,
away
from He's had a hell of a fucking headache all day.
He said he's two steps away from being a full-blown alcoholic. And McClane says,
One step.
It's classic. I mean, that whole scene. And then they introduce Charlie, I think. That's when the bomb is found, right? And he comes in and gets the liquid.
Yeah, they find it in Chinatown, in a park in Chinatown, because Zeus is going to take off. Mm-hmm. And he tells them that the bomb was found in Harlem.
Yep, in order to keep
him around.
Like
2 blocks from where they met.
And then there's a line, he doesn't, you know, this guy doesn't care about skin color, even if you do. So again, there's a lot of that wish fulfillment in there. But what a great intro from Charlie. And the other thing, too, about the foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah, the little epoxy paperclip chair bomb. Really cool stuff.
You know the screenwriter, William Goldman, like one of the legends, wrote Butch Cassidy and Sundance, Misery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's written some books on screenwriting, and he did some reviews before. But one of the things in 98 he was praised Titanic for was the scene where they show the simulation of what actually happens, and they're telling the audience this is exactly how this ship hits the iceberg and what's going to happen.
That's
and
fair.
How it breaks off.
Yeah.
And he praised that scene. The epoxy scene is just like that. When these liquids, I mean, everything's laid out for the audience. The liquids mix together. When you see the red pour into the clear, it's game over. Any detonator can be used anywhere.
It's highly volatile.
Highly volatile. He put it on the head of a safety pin. Or, I'm sorry, a paperclip.
Paperclip, yeah.
And got
throws
that
reaction. It at a chair, blows the chair across.
Which is another great quote from Kowalski. Charlie, you're going to be wearing that chair up your ass. I say it all the time. And then Walter's like, Christ almighty, Charlie. Those two lines go together. You have to say them. Like, we need to have watch parties for Die Hard with a Vengeance. Like, I'm not fucking around when I say this is one of my favorite movies
Man,
of all
time.
Man, since
you watched it this morning, you should have.
We should have watched it together.
Watched it together today.
And I probably should have because that fucking conference call, I should have rewatched it. But yeah, we got to watch that soon because. This is like the Rocky Horror of movies for me, because I hate Rocky Horror, by the way.
Yeah, Rocky Horror, I watched it too late. It's not really my thing.
Oh, my God, it's terrible. And I like musicals, and I love party-type movies like that, but it's fucking awful. But this movie is fantastic.
I could see cosplaying to go to a midnight screening of Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Dirty-ass wife beater on
shit.
Yeah, I would do that.
The shield hanging around my neck.
Big, thick plastic glasses for Zeus and shit.
Hell, I'll go as Zeus, you go as McClane.
Right. Balding head and everything. Yeah, I'll trim it down.
Well, they both have amazing hairlines.
Yeah, like, it's so
these amazing heart-shaped hairlines.
Another good line I liked in that same scene is when they get McClane in the police plaza and the lady says, beer is normally taken internally, John.
It's apparently just reeks of beer.
He just reeks. He is like one step away from indigent or something. Like, we know this guy is just not happy at all with anything.
Yeah.
And the only thing that gives him life is his job. And he's even suspended from that. So he's a fucking drunk right now.
Yeah, he has a great line. It really sums up the John McClane character to me where I can't remember it exactly. He says, while I was waiting for you, I was watching some of the features.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an interview with Willis where he talks about how I've always played him like someone who hates doing the things he has to do.
Mm.
He feels like he has to do it, but he's so fucking annoyed that he's the only one to do it. And that kind of sums it up perfectly to me.
Yeah, without a doubt.
He has this call to be a hero, but he's a very reluctant hero.
And one of the best things they did, the fact that this one is such a departure from the first two, because the second one's basically the same type of movie as the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, through and through. We talked about this before, even the Christmas setting. Mm-hmm. It got to be too much.
Did you notice this one has like 3 Christmas references, even though it's set in summer?
You got to remind me then.
There's one where it's like, hey, you guys see a guy come through with 8 reindeer before he shoots the guy with the truck?
Yeah, Mickey with the city inspectors or some shit. And then the kid says, it's Christmas, you can steal City Hall.
Yep, and there was a third one. Charlie's disarming the bomb, and he goes, 8 booby traps, 4 misleads, and a partridge in a pear tree.
I didn't even make those connections, and I know all these fucking quotes right there. I liked his line, too. He says, once it's mixed, be somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Just run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is really heavy-duty shit, and that's all we need to know about it.
And so once they get my next favorite scene, right after that, they get to the payphone, and... The whole St. Ives riddle, because the actors, I don't know, when Samuel, when he says, weren't you listening? What the fuck is wrong with you? I just love that whole line every time. He's like, and then Bruce, I got a bad fucking hangover. Stop with all that damn yelling. Because I remember that riddle from like middle school or grade school or something like that.
Yeah, the man going to Versailles or whatever.
Yeah, St. Ives.
Yeah, yeah. while I was on my way to St. Ives, met a man with seven wives and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the guy. It's yeah. just one. How do I type one?
Right.
0001.
And then McClay says, well, what are the other guys doing? Sitting in the fucking row. How the fuck should I know? Because the stakes are too high for this kind of bullshit in this movie. And Zeus is not having it. And
McClane's a completist. He wants to know what the rest of the story is.
Yeah. And McClane also, Zeus leads him around quite a bit in this movie. In some instances, anyway. Like when they're in the cab and he says, I wish we had a police car or ambulance or something. And he says, what? To follow. And like solving these riddles and stuff. McClane's a little dense, but we might be able to chalk it up to the hangover.
Yeah. I mean, he is hungover. He's not on his best, but it's really amazing to me in this movie to see him in New York and see him in his element.
Oh, yeah.
Because he knows the city inside and out. Like, and that comes into play a lot. It's like, yeah. He knows exactly what the toll is on the bridge, the mm-hmm. 10 quarters. He knows.
It's a very New York movie. And I mean, I've yeah. never been, but the writer must be some kind of native or somebody who did a polish on it. Because that whole Mickey character with all the weird references and shit. The references themselves in the movie, you know, the 138th, they don't really expose it. Or it's not explained to the audience. They just say McClane has to be at 138th Street at this time, mm-hmm. wearing this sign. Or when, he and Zeus are arguing about directions. Well, you know, this way is south. And, you know, yeah. I said we're going this way.
Yeah, yeah.
No, we're going through the park, motherfucker.
The fastest way is through the park. Like, he never hesitates because he's so comfortable in this city. And I think that's really fun to watch.
It's
none
so
of the,
fun.
None of the other Die Hard movies so far have done that. It's like they've all been fish out of water stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like in the entire, I don't know, pond, whatever, right now. He's in his element for sure.
Yeah.
And
it's one thing I hope they redo, like if they get this new Die Hard reboot off the ground, I kind of hope they go back to New York and let him play in that or get to know the city if it's going to be like a young John McClane.
But knowing Hollywood, they'll try to hit the same exact notes from other ones, so they'll do Fish Out of Water again.
Yeah, could be.
But they really should be in New York.
I mean, the Fish Out of Water stories are great too. I mean, the original Die Hard and Die Hard 2 and Die Hard 4
mm-hmm.
are all out of New York. And it's kind of how McClane thrives or how we show how well he can adapt to things. But after two movies of that, we can do one in New York and show how fucking amazing he is.
And without missing
a beat. As a New York cop.
What was another thing I liked about that phone scene? Oh, yeah, when he gets Simon on the phone and he says, yeah, but you're 10 seconds too late or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he says, boom.
No, the edge is one, motherfucker.
There's a bomb in it. And Zeus dives down and shit. My cousin and I, even to this day, to represent an explosion, we go, boom.
I like when he's chuckling on the phone after yeah. they fall for the
Maurice does that sometimes, too.
I didn't say Simon Says.
It's so awesome. And then he tells him...
Then it's the subway train.
Yes, and yeah. he tells him you have to be there...
You have like 30 minutes uh-huh. to go 90 blocks to get to the subway station.
Try to evacuate, I blow the train. Get there by any method other than by foot or some shit, I blow the train or whatever.
No, you can get there any way you want except the train, I think.
Okay.
So you can't take the train to the train station.
And that whole car chase, I mean, John McTiernan, he directed the first one and this one. And he did Last Action Hero, which is funny because we talked about all these connections to him.
Yeah.
He does – that car chase is really effective. When he starts going through the park and shit, driving over the sidewalks and – I don't know. It's just – I still get excited watching it. And some things
it's
become
shot
a little
wonderfully.
Yes.
Like the way the camera moves mm-hmm. around the car and mm-hmm. – yeah.
And when they radio the ambulance, there's this great shot where the ambulance roars into frame. And then way in the background, you see the cab also mm-hmm. zip into frame
yeah.
about 3 seconds after that. And they're following through just like a linebacker.
And Zeus is like, you should have told him to go to 112th Street. Uh-huh. You know, we could have followed him the whole way. He's like, no, that's a different hospital. It's like, again, it's McClane
so
in his
insular.
Element.
That's right.
Yeah. This is a question I had, though. Like, it's established that Simon wants the bomb to go off in Wall Street
mm-hmm.
To destabilize this bank's mm-hmm. security system. So Zeus gets there on time and gets to the phone. And he says, you know, the rules apply to both of you. Sorry, uh-huh. you lose and blows the yeah. train.
I'm afraid this is non-compliance.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
But my question is, what if McClane had stuck with him and they both made it to the phone on time? Would he still just invent an excuse to blow
oh,
the
I'm
train?
Oh, I'm sure he would have. Because it's pretty established that Simon expected each one of his traps to kill McClane. Each one of them.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, I think he wanted them both there so that when it all blew up, no harm, no foul. Or mm-hmm. at least McClane. But then Zeus kind of pulled himself into it. By inconveniencing the first trap. And, I think he was going to blow him up either way. And you just can't kill McClane.
I guess I just want to know what his reason would have been if McClane and Zeus had made it on time and answered the phone. Like, what bullshit would he have come up with? Like, I saw you take a uh-huh. cab. That's non-civilian. Or that's a civilian vehicle. I don't know. That's a non-civilian vehicle.
I see where you're going, because Simon Dib, he does play fair with all his stuff.
Yeah.
But you're right. If it was meant to go off anyway, I think he honestly had no expectation they'd make it there on time.
Yeah. He seemed to, like they say, there was no chance of us getting there, but Zeus gets there on time. And John just happens to split up. If he'd stuck with Zeus, he would have had to come up with a crazy reason to still blow the train.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And then there's that great line while they're driving through Central Park. Are you aiming for these people? Because I had the game, the Die Hard Trilogy game on the Saturn and PS1, the PlayStation. And the third game was the best, just like the movie. So you'd ride around and you hit the people and there'd be blood on the windshield. The wipers would come up.
Oh, God.
And you hear them go, ah! And you hear a fake Sam Jackson in the background going, are you aiming for these people?
No. Well, maybe that mime.
I wrote that in. Maybe that mime. It's great.
It's such a weird John McClane joke to throw in there.
Yeah, because he might actually mean it.
Feels like a Die Hard 2 level improv.
Yes, just the facts.
Just the facts, man.
And that great scene where when McClane does leave, the asshole, the rich asshole, gets in the cab with Zeus.
Yeah, because he's got to go to Wall Street.
Uh-huh. You heard me. What did he say? 120th or whatever in Wall Street, or I'll have your medallion suspended. What, you don't like white people?
112 Wall Street, you got it. It takes off like a bat out of hell.
And that car is flying down that street, too. Yeah. And he just jumps out and starts running right down into the subway.
Mm-hmm.
Just, oh, my God, this movie here, it just gives me such joy. And all he needed to do was show that guy for like 8 frames that he's all fucked up now.
Yeah.
You don't need to hear or see anything else. He's just done.
He's going to call into work. Tell his mistress that things aren't working out. He's going to go back to make things work with his wife.
That was his sign. That's exactly it.
He realized he's made a lot of mistakes in his life. He's going back to school, become a veterinarian like he always intended.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to become an inner city lawyer now. Yeah. Pro bono. He's got to atone. That's a whole TV series built around this guy now. Yeah. So what happens after they blow up?
Then Simon sends them after the park bomb.
Ah, yes.
While we have this whole long sequence of him driving, you know, infiltrating the bank.
Yes. I wrote down that I love really the fact great. That they send McClane and Zeus out of the movie for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, they disappear for a while. Because he's like, you know, you got like 20 minutes to get to this park.
Mm-hmm.
No rush.
Yeah, take your time. Go back for it.
And then we follow Simon
mm-hmm.
pulling off his heist.
Which is when they reveal Simon, right? Up on the rooftop.
Yeah.
When all the police scatter.
Because they tell him and the FBI... He tells them in the FBI that there's a bomb, a massive bomb in a school,
mm-hmm.
and if they evacuate the schools, he's going to blow it. But they know that they can search for the bomb, so they immediately leave Wall Street. They can't. Which gets me to one of my favorite characters in the movie is the operator, Wanda.
Yes, Sergeant Turley.
The call volume in here just tripled. What is going on? Okay, calm down. We're going to handle all the police communication, and then she says. And I'm going to marry Donald Trump.
Oh.
Which both Trump and Hillary Clinton get a name drop in this movie.
Oh, man.
Which I thought was really weird. Yeah.
Well, he was the biggest name in New York.
I mean, yeah.
The bullshit. Apparently, people inside New York, I saw Elaine Leibovitz or something recently say that people in New York knew he was a world-class bullshitter and a con artist, but that's a whole other story. But for outside, he kind of represented New York.
He represented wealth and power and stature. Yeah. Grabbing pussies
and all. Not an attractive guy at all. I mean, I'm pretty hetero, but that's an ugly guy.
Oh,
that's
God. A guy, yeah, hideously ugly. Yeah, he's Donald Trump.
He's
yes.
very ugly and very insecure about it. And, fuck. I don't want to get on a rant about Trump.
That's why he bought his mail order bride and mm-hmm. made her first lady of the fucking United States.
The fucking U.S. and all these evangelicals lined up to salute these people.
Ugh.
Handed the country over to the Russians. Brought a mail order bride torches. With their tiki torches.
Yep.
Yeah, with a mail order bride, a non-American first lady. God, just
moving on.
Yeah, everything you can think of.
I just thought it was hilarious that line about marrying Donald Trump, and then later the Hillary Clinton line. I was like, damn,
it's so well populated though, because yeah, that lady
Which,
has
again,
one.
It's a very New York movie, so that those are two very big New York figures.
No, she has two scenes. She has a scene later on.
Yeah,
the goddamn city.
The goddamn city just called 911.
But, you know, you see these people for just a second, and it's just great. These are real characters. I get even Sergeant Turley. They're just great actors. You just see him.
Okay, Wanda.
And he's stressed out.
It's not a big deal.
Uh-huh.
I know, it's horrible. Like, half my hair just fell out. But it's going to be fine. We're going to handle it.
And Simon, when he calls the radio station, you know, he calls Elvis Duran. I think he's a real guy, real radio guy, DJ, whatever the fuck he was. But, you know, even his quotes, first, I got to tell you, I love your show. He tells him,
I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, huge fan. And just,
do you know what the police are up to?
That's a bomb.
I don't think he's really doing it in this scene, but when he's infiltrating the bank, he's doing like a Southern American accent.
Yes.
Which is adorable.
I love it. City inspector's office.
Hello.
We'd like to get a look at the damage.
Ah.
A lot of important. It's Wall Street.
Somebody had fun.
A lot of money here. A lot of important people. The mayor doesn't want to piss off. Oh, God, this movie. One thing
Jeremy
I wrote down.
Jeremy Irons. Oh, he's phenomenal.
Great. He's great in this movie.
I mean, not better than Alan Rickman as a villain, but on caliber with Alan Rickman as a villain. He's fucking good.
And part of what elevates Hans in general is the fact that he's not the normal villain. He has, you know, he's doing it for greed and he's got jokes and...
And like he says, he's an exceptional thief. We like to see characters that just are fantastic at what they do.
Yeah, and he's Simon, not physically strong.
Yeah, Simon is the same way. He's just sharp as a wit. Sharp as a... What's the word I want?
Tech?
Sharp as a tack.
I love
sharper than I am, apparently.
When they reveal Simon, he turns around and says, they bought it. You can begin. Like, the movie twist is right there. We don't realize it yet, but he says, they bought it.
I don't think I ever noticed that before this time. Like, he says right there that the bomb is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
He says right there the bomb doesn't exist. They bought it.
You can begin.
Yeah.
So they start the whole thing.
Huh. I guess they bought it. All right.
Such a great intro. It's got that, what's the fucking name of that song?
Oh,
Ants go marching one by one. Yeah, it's that one. And Targo and his wife. Her name's Katya, right? His girlfriend.
Something like that.
Katya, yeah. Who is great. She is so great.
She's
not a word of dialogue.
Now. Yep. Doesn't speak, but she's cold-blooded.
Cold-blooded.
Cool.
And she's got the burn scars from the scene in the van, which I guess we should probably jump back. The exposition there is also really well done. For me, anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're talking to McClane, and he has the same impatience that the audience might at this point. You know, I saw the movie Battle of the Bulge kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, get to the fucking point already. And because they're asking him all these questions. And then the guy in the glasses turns around. The name Gruber mean anything to you?
And, yeah, rings a bell.
Just three frames of Hans. And that's all you need because you don't even need to have seen the first movie.
I didn't know until recently that Alan Rickman didn't know he was going to be dropped. And so that reaction is genuine.
I remember hearing that, yeah.
I thought that was really interesting. Was like, I always thought he looked kind of weird when he dropped in the movie. It's like, it's because it's a real reaction.
Abject terror, yeah. It's like Veronica Cartwright in
Alien.
He's
really terrified, yeah.
Yeah, when she gets that blood all on her.
So they show that shot in this movie when he brings up Gruber.
It's one of the most iconic shots in the Die Hard series, too.
Yeah.
So, yep, that's all you needed was like three frames. Oh, we got it.
Yeah,
audience knows,
that's Gruber.
Remember, that's Gruber. Over and done. And also like how the hard-ass FBI guys in the car are also willing to help. They're not the Duanes either.
They're not the Agent Smiths. Agent Johnsons.
They're not the Johnsons or that Duane guy.
Special Agent Johnson. This is Special Agent Johnson. No. So,
I got kids at these schools.
Yeah, because you know? Walter immediately, like, you're not going to give me some sort of jurisdictional bullshit on this. I was like, no, I got kids in this city. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hit the panic button, get 500 agents up here now.
Mm-hmm. And everybody's competent. That's the other thing. Nobody's incompetent. They're very competent.
That's absolutely true.
And they're so, the scene works so well that when they send Zeus and McClane out, like, they literally just run into the background, like literally, and then all these other good characters just take the forefront for a few minutes, and it totally works for the whole time. And then it cut back to Zeus and McClane when they you know, for the Rodney King joke.
Yeah.
And then we don't see them again until they actually make it to the park, because the heist itself, we're watching it, and it's really well done. Oh, which I did write down a question, because I never knew the answer. Are they actually killing these people with those injections? Or are they just drugging them?
See, I had a question about that too, because there's a lot of people that just like snap their neck or shoot them. And then some people get the injection, which makes me think the injection is non-lethal.
That's what I think too. I think it's non-lethal.
It's a tranquilizer, but I don't know why they're making the distinction between who gets killed and who doesn't.
I think that probably the ones who are doing the killing are lower level, like Otto. You know, Otto doesn't speak English. They're just basically like hired guns or grunts or something. But Simon and his people are a lot more efficient, except for Katya slices the shit out of that dude.
With that nice curved blade thing she's got. Badass.
She's such a badass. And then Simon, also badass. He just grabs her arm and tosses her aside like laundry. He hands her to Targo while
I love when he's just waiting for her to take him out. Like, he's standing there while he's unloading a shotgun, just like, any second now.
Yep, it's coming.
And then she comes through the back door, through the vault that he's guarding, and slices him up.
I love the fact, I wrote down suits and boots with Simon's intro, you know, because it's part of the subterfuge. Up above, he looks the part, but everybody's got on the combat boots. And then there's that great scene where everybody's getting out of the car along with him, which is kind of like Colonel Stewart's scene in Die Hard 2.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's all super organized. Like you said, super everyone organized. Is competent. Everyone is the best at what they do.
Mm-hmm. Even Zeus. He's an electrician.
Yeah.
He knows what the fuck he's doing.
My favorite line in the movie. It's like, can you hotwire a car? Of course, I'm an electrician. Only problem is, takes too fucking long. I love that. I've always loved that so much.
What a fucking movie, man. Like I said, my problems with this movie are so minor. And some of them even just came about based on today's political or my own climate nowadays.
Like, kind of some of the racial issues are a bit dated.
Right.
Yeah.
Just a bit. And it's like, whatever. It's nothing. There's no deal breakers in this movie. It fucking works and it continues to work. So after they send McClane out, they get to the park. I never fully got the puzzle in the park. I get it and sometimes
today,
I don't.
Today I actually paused it. So I was like, today I'm going to figure out the puzzle before they tell it to me.
I'm glad you did.
So here's how it works. You got a 5-gallon jug and a 3-gallon jug, and you need 4 gallons of water to stop the bomb. So you fill the 5-gallon jug and you fill the 3-gallon jug from that, leaving 2 gallons in the 5-gallon jug. You empty.
That's right.
You empty the 3-gallon, pour the 2 gallons in the 3-gallon, fill the 5-gallon again, finish filling the 3-gallon because there's 1 gallon of empty space, and then you have 4 gallons in the 5-gallon jug.
And sometimes I have gotten it, but sometimes I lose it.
It takes a minute to think about, but this time I was like, I really thought it through, because they really only give you like them figuring out the puzzle. You don't see like how they got 2 gallons in the 3-gallon jug kind of thing. Like, uh-huh. You don't see them solve the entire puzzle. So like you can... There's still room for you to fill in the gap and figure it out.
And by the way, I love the fact that when they open the lid, it says, I am a bomb. You have armed me. says, shit. Because he's just fed up with everything they do causing this kind of strife.
I told you not to open it, McClane.
I love it.
It begs the question, like, if they never opened it, would there be a problem?
Exactly.
I mean, I guess if they didn't open it and solve the puzzle, they wouldn't know what the next puzzle is. The Yankee Stadium.
Good point. Thing. Good point. And I think he calls them. As soon as they solve it too, right?
He calls them when they first open it. So clearly he got a message that the bomb's been activated. So he calls them and says, I'll call you back in 5 minutes if you're still alive. Calls them back once they've solved it and gives them the next.
You surprised me again, John. that is also in the game. You would hear Simon sometimes in the game because it's all first person driver's perspective when you're riding around.
I wonder if I can find someone doing a speed run of Die Hard with a vengeance, game on YouTube.
Yep, look up Die Hard Trilogy because it's part of that.
Okay.
They never released them separately, but it's one game that has different movies. Like the first one was, what type of game was it like? Kind of like Contra style, maybe. That might not
okay. be. But, I feel like so I you might see have McClane played the original Die Hard game at some point when I was a kid.
There was an arcade version, too, but it wasn't Trilogy. So the second game was like a shooter. So you're going through the airport.
Oh, okay.
And you can shoot, first person, but it was the kind where if you had the light gun, you could fire.
Right.
And then the third one was a driving game. So each game was a different genre.
That's
so
really fun.
That's why it was so fun. Yeah. But Vengeance is by far the best one.
It's at this point in the movie that John figures out, like, something's going on. This isn't just about fucking with me, torturing me. There's something deeper at work here. And he has like an epiphany about, you know, Wall Street.
And he almost gets hit by the dump truck.
Yeah. There's the dump truck. And he goes like, you know, what does Wall Street have none of? And Zeus is like... Just gonna recite the entire movie.
Yeah. We should, yeah.
Zeus is like, are you picking up his habits now? You're speaking in riddles. He's like, no, stay with me. What is the one thing Wall Street has none of? Schools, which is brilliant because the police are going to go anywhere else in the city to search schools. And what is it to have a shitload of? Money and gold. Yeah. So then he has this idea that this is all a robbery.
I know the man. I know the family.
Yeah.
He says.
Yeah.
And he's right.
Yeah. He knows them very well.
That guy, Ricky, by the way, who gets killed, underground by Otto. He was in the other Die Hard movie. I'm almost positive he's in Die Hard 2. Because he's
really?
No, I'm sorry. Well, he might be in Die Hard 2, but he is also in Last Action Hero. Because I said he must have some sort of friendship or relationship with John McTiernan. I actually wrote down that maybe as a joke, you know, because McTiernan eventually went to jail for hiring PIs to spy on people and stuff. Wiretapping and all this kind of shit. So I said he must be family or a private detective. So he's
I was not aware of that.
On the make, yeah. Because I don't think, I don't know if McKinnon
he actually
still
served
alive.
Prison time?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm not even sure if he's in prison now. He might be now, but he certainly hasn't made a movie in a while.
Huh.
And he's a good director. I mean, I like a lot of his movies without realizing it.
Yeah, these are fun movies. I'd have to look in to see what else he's done.
He made Predator. The first one is
that's a classic.
That's an action masterpiece.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah, Last Action Hero, another one of my favorites.
Die Hard and Die Hard 3.
Mm-hmm. Aside from that, I can't think of others at the moment, but we'll IMDb him before this is over. And so at this point, yeah, Ricky's dead. They turn back around, and then I think he sends Zeus to go check out Yankee Stadium or something, wouldn't
it? He sends Zeus a little bit later. Once they get to the aqueduct, they split up, and he goes through the aqueduct and sends Zeus to Yankee Stadium.
Oh, you're right. That is farther along, but because they get the gold bar. Because
it's after they figure out a heist has gone on, the gold is missing. Zeus gives the bomb to the fake cops.
I like that too. The fact that both people would say
yes,
that. Yeah,
some kid could find that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Zeus goes and gets it. And then the terrorist leaves it on the side of the road. It's like, I don't want to ride with it. Some kid could find it.
I soldiers, I like the idea that they speak English and all that kind of stuff. And the guy's like, I'm going to need an answer on this issue. He's got his southern accent kind of going on there.
Yeah, they all have better American accents than
our Americans' fake New York accents, maybe?
Simon.
Oh, yeah. That goes way without saying.
Okay, McTiernan, Hunt for Red October, Basic was his last one. Rollerball.
I think Basic was pretty good.
He did the Thomas Crown Affair remake, which I liked a lot.
He sure did, and I really liked that movie. He sure did. Basic is his last movie, because that's like 2003 or 2.
Predator was only his second movie. Wow. He did something I never heard of called Nomads before that. That was his first movie. Hmm. So not a huge filmography, and yeah, he hasn't done anything since 2003.
And he was good at it. I wonder what happened there.
I have no idea.
Other than the spying and shit.
Yeah, that's weird. Someone needs to make a movie about John McTiernan, I guess.
Yeah, because the private detective he hired was Anthony Pelicanos, and he was supposed to be legendary around Hollywood for all the dirt he had on people.
Hmm.
Mm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the movie gets a little hectic in this area with the aqueduct and the... Oh, okay, this is something I wanted to bring up with you since we got to the Yankee Stadium part. Because they don't go to Yankee Stadium right away. They go to Wall Street to figure out what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
And Simon gets a call that, McClane's walking up to the bank and the black one is coming to me. And Simon's really disappointed. He's like, oh, we went to all the trouble setting all that fun up at the Yankee Stadium. When Zeus gets to Yankee Stadium, there's just like a puzzle on a chair and a sniper. I was like, what trouble did you go through? And I wanted to ask you what you thought the trouble of this was.
Maybe the trouble of getting them into Yankee Stadium?
Okay.
Set up, you know, because it.
So the trouble of everything thing. Leading up to Yankee Stadium, because that's the end game. Like, they're going to find this thing and get shot, and that's the end of John
game
McClane.
Over.
Yeah.
And then the trouble of just getting his people inside of the stadium, too, maybe.
Yeah, because I got to set up with a sniper rifle all day in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, those soldiers didn't get to do nothing.
I think, because when he finds the game and picks it up, it's one of these little things where you roll a marble around and get it in the bases, and all three of the marbles are in all three of the bases. I think all the trouble was Simon trying to get this game staged right.
Yeah, it'd be just right.
I feel like he's had to wait years to enact his revenge on Don McClane. He's like, I have this vision with this fucking game, and I can't get the balls and the goddamn notches, and God, I'll kill everybody.
First step bomb with fucking tellers, blowing it all up. Yeah, because the plan didn't have any bombs before then. He just decided, for rage from that game, he's got
to
do it.
So I feel like there's a deleted scene from Die Hard with a Vengeance with just Simon spending hours trying to get this game right so that he can set it on this thing for John McClane to find and get shot in the head. Not even a bomb for John McClane, just an unceremonious sniper shot.
That's it. I guess that was sort of the contingency plan. I think Yankee Stadium itself might have been the backup, because they should have been dead multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of deleted scenes,
he definitely should have died when he threw the bomb out the back of the train.
Yeah,
that's a good sized bomb. It didn't even hit the ground before it blew. He should be done right there. Because it blew a hole in the world.
And it would have been way worse had he not gotten it out of the train.
Yeah. Because it would have killed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because presumably if he's at the back of the train and he survives, then everyone survives and he saves the day. But no, he would have died. Well, you were saying about deleted scenes?
Oh, we'll get to that at the end. Just the ending. I had never seen the original ending.
Me either. I didn't see it until today.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know it existed I was looking at special features, and there's not much.
Just it takes McClane to an area.
Alternate ending. I was like, an alternate ending?
Yeah, you never?
No, I'd never seen it. It's terrible.
And it's really bleak. It takes McClane to a place that he can't come back from.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also, it seems like the natural endgame for a guy like him.
Yeah. You know,
after.
I believed it. I mean, we can talk about it.
Yeah.
You talk about the alternate ending?
I didn't watch it today. I probably should. I know what happens in it. For folks who don't know, I think they basically sit around playing Russian roulette, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. McClane finds Simon like in a restaurant in whatever country he's landed in.
Mm-hmm. Months later.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
So he's literally out for vengeance now and not just.
So all of the helicopter stuff at the end of the movie hasn't happened. He's gotten away after the boat explodes and he's won. And McClane calls his wife. And then there's months later, he catches up with him somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having a conversation about, you know, how there wasn't any gold on the boat and all this. And McClane sets down a like Chinese rocket launcher on the table.
Right, it's a rocket launcher.
Yeah. And he says, you know, I'm going to ask you questions and you're going to answer them. And anytime you don't answer a question, you have to pull the trigger. And he's like, well, we don't know which way the missile is going to come out. You've taken the sights off of it. He's like, that's right. And you can turn as many times as you want. So he's answering his questions and McClane, really out of character, is asking like these riddles like he would do, which was dumb to me. And he keeps like flipping the thing back and forth, maybe trying to get a feel for which side the missile's in and which side is the good side, the safe side. And I forget what question he asked him that he refuses to answer, but he's like, pulls a gun on him and says, pull the trigger. And he turns it around again. You think that's the right way? He's like, yes. And then he, blows himself away with a fucking rocket launcher that doesn't really explode. It just kind of like puffs and shoots through him. And then McClane walks away, I think, with a token yippee-ki-yay motherfucker.
Yeah. Premeditated murder at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Our guy has become a sociopath.
It's not only like out of character and takes McClane in a weirdly unheroic, not just anti-heroic, but unheroic direction. It's also really poorly put together. It's a really dumb ending.
Yep.
So I'm really glad they changed it with the helicopter and the...
And not exciting at all either. So
no, it's not. Know. That's the thing. There's no action to it. It's just like this chess game. I'm like, McClane's not really a chess player.
No.
He's more of a bowling guy. Right.
He flips over the table that the chess, is on, the chessboard's on. So, and
really unheroic, really dumb.
Very dark, but also logistic-wise. I mean, a New York cop in his condition, you can't even see him getting to another country, let alone doing this to hunt down somebody, you know?
Yeah, I forget. Like, it's established that he's gotten back together with his wife. Like, after he kills Simon, he's going to go spend Christmas with his kids. That's a fourth Christmas reference that's cut out of the movie. And so it's implied that him and his wife are back together and happy and maybe living in L.A., There's something else too. Like, oh, he was fired. Oh, this is it. He was fired from the police.
Oh, really?
Because the FBI believed he had something to do with the heist.
Oh, because they got away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Because he didn't close the deal. He didn't catch them. They think he had something to do with it, with no evidence, because no evidence for that would exist.
Right. Right.
And they just terminate him. So I was like, that's bullshit, man.
Yeah. I mean, a radical departure from everything else in the movie.
That would have maybe ruined the entire movie if that was the actual ending.
If not the franchise, because like I said, he goes to a place, he's not coming back from there. There's so much else that I like there. That character, he always, in every movie, finds that little weirdo person who knows everything about everything. Or
what's his name in this one? Roger or something?
I thought it was Mickey, but that's Mickey's the name he uses when he kills the people in the aqueduct.
Yeah.
When he's looking for the 8 reindeer.
Jerry.
Jerry. Damn it.
Jerry's the know-it-all truck driver. I wrote down, good thing he didn't immediately shoot Jerry when he comes up on the first truck, because he kills the other guys immediately.
Oh, so bad.
But Jerry just happens to be another truck driver working at the aqueduct, so he doesn't immediately kill him.
And his character works. I mean, he rambles so much, and he knows so much about what he's talking about.
Yeah, I love his history lesson of the aqueduct.
Yeah, history lessons, yeah.
And he's like, do you know what the most interesting thing about the aqueduct is? And McClane could just not answer or shut it down right there. He's like, nah, Jerry, what's the most
important? And he's smiling
what's
the whole
time. What's
the
most interesting thing? He's like, the valves.
Yeah.
The valves are the most interesting thing.
This is the most exciting day of Jerry's life in a long time.
It's the best day for Jerry.
Because he's been sitting on this shit for a long time, too. And he had to get it out.
He's like, we've moved 10 times more earth than they did for the Hoover Dam and all this stuff.
And then the answer to the Chester A. Arthur.
Chester A. Arthur, yep.
Oh,
ask him totally what the 21st president is. Chester A. Arthur, yeah, 1881 to 1845. And then he says something about, you know, he was the customs officer right here in New York.
And McClane says, I'm like, no, I didn't know
no,
that.
No, I didn't know yeah. that, Jerry. Which is a weird...
He just can't believe his good fortune.
Yeah.
McClane cannot...
I mean, it's a weird coincidence because they only choose Chester A. Arthur because... Zeus's kids go to Chester A. Arthur Elementary, and it gets Zeus more involved in the game. So it's a coincidence that he has that tied in New York as the customs agent as they're trying to smuggle this gold out of New York.
Mm-hmm.
But it works for me.
It does. It does. The movie's so structurally sound. We forgive it. It's little quirks because I guess you'd have to infer that they wheeled the bomb in after Zeus became part of the game. I mean, it's the only way you can do that.
Yeah, I mean... I think they chose the school based on Zeus, which is a little bit weird that they didn't have that all planned out and in place ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
That they only, or maybe they
but
decided
it probably
to move
didn't
the,
matter
move
because
the bomb.
It's not a real bomb. You know what I mean? So ultimately, it didn't matter where they were going to put it. But Simon, being the Rube Goldbergian guy he is, decides, well, let's put this in there. Like you said, get somebody more invested.
Since he knew the police were going to split up and start searching schools, he might have had it on the move. And just had it end up at this one at Chester A. Arthur because of Zeus.
Yeah, I think that's what happens.
That would actually make a lot more sense to me than he just threw it in a random school.
Yeah, I think he did it after Zeus became a part of everything because he knew the area, probably the store owner. And as he was watching,
he doesn't leave McClane's much to chance. Up. So he doesn't want a chance they're going to accidentally stumble onto this bomb, this fake bomb, and then be back up to full strength. More than full strength because by then all the FBI will be in town.
Mm-hmm. All the cops, again, do great work in the school. Lambert, yeah. Kowalski and all these guys, you know, everybody's heroic.
Oh, God. I love, even though it's a fake bomb, even knowing it's a fake bomb, that scene has so much
still
tension
works.
When
still
the
works.
Kids are still there. And they he doesn't blink and he's sprinting into the school to save these kids. He knows there's like 1 minute left before this thing's supposed to blow. There's no way they're getting out. But he has to try, and Charlie, or whatever his name, has to try to disarm the bomb because there's still two kids in the school, or four kids, I think. Oh,
it's just so well done.
It's great.
So well done. And then they, Kowalski, they kind of cower down into the corner because now they know it's over. And they got their classic Die Hard music because at the same time this is going on, McClane is on the boat discovering the real bomb.
Yeah,
with the climactic.
Because we were promised like 2,000 pounds of this stuff was gone missing. We want to see that explosion.
That's right.
But it's all part of the plan to make
us
think the gold has been destroyed. That Simon is some sort of nihilist that just wants to bring down capitalism. But in fact, he's just switched it out. And some people get to know about the switched out gold, and some people don't get to know about the switched out gold.
Mm-hmm. Very few. I don't think Targo knew about it until it was
Targo
too late.
Didn't know about it, yeah. And the guy that told Targo about it didn't know about it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Shit, I think maybe Simon and Katya and a few others.
Well, they had like a bunch of the men at the end. They're like, you know, now we're an army that has to decide what country we want to buy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of them were in on it, but for some reason, like this long-term ally of his is not in on it. These other guys on the boat are not in on it.
So I have to conclude, those people were already loyal to Simon.
You know what I bet it is he told each of them what they wanted to hear. It's like the people who wanted gold, he's like, no, we're going to swap out the gold. The people who wanted to bring down America, he's like, we're going to steal their gold, destroy it, and destabilize the entire world economy. And everyone's like, fucking yes, let's do it.
Right.
And he just came down on the side of, I really want the gold.
So he pulled a Trump. He told motherfuckers what they wanted to hear.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He trumped the hell out of them.
It's going to be tremendous. We'll undermine capitalism.
I have the best... the best words.
we're gonna blow it up in big water.
big ocean water.
Fucking asshole idiot. There's a lot on the boat and I didn't get a chance to really see it all today. There's a lot on the boat that I like. I especially love the part that Simon shoots Zeus in the leg because he tries, and you know, Zeus with the gun.
I had a question about that too, because you know, he's never used a gun before.
Right. That's
what I was getting. And John says pull the thing back and you're good to go, but John doesn't notice the safety still on. which is clearly something you can see because Simon takes one look at the gun and says, oh, okay, he's got the safety on.
It is possible McLean doesn't know his way around that kind of ordnance, I guess.
It's like the exact same gun he's using a ton of in Die Hard.
Well, we're not supposed to bring that up, Joe.
He's using a lot in Die Hard, like that exact same Uzi. But, you know, maybe the safety's on the other side from and he can't see it, something like that. But
yeah, it's inverted.
It seems like
it's a foreign gun. Yeah,
gun using 101 is like, oh, is the safety off? Okay, now you're good to go.
But that's great, though. Simon has no reaction at all when he sees Zeus because, like you said, he's identified it right away.
Standing there eating his hard-boiled egg.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounded Samaritan. Good. Like, while he was nibbling on his hard-boiled eggs, like, I should hard-boil some eggs. That sounds good to just snack on some hard-boiled eggs.
And I also like the fact that Simon, like you said, I'm a soldier, not a monster.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what you see when they don't want to leave the bomb out there for the kids either. Mm-hmm. Like, they're there for a purpose. And I just, except for Otto.
They're not super villains. They're guys who, you know, are trying to rip off a bunch of money, seek some personal revenge, but they're not there to kill random kids.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Bomb with Tellers was probably... It blew up before they opened, didn't it? There were no people in there, I don't think.
I don't remember them saying that. Yeah. It's possible.
I don't think there were casualties at all. Or, I mean, at least mentioned anyway.
There would have been casualties on the train.
That is true. No, there's definitely going to be casualties on the train.
And obviously, they killed some of the people infiltrating the bank. So, I think they view it as a war on America. So, in any war, there's casualties type of thing. So, they trank...
But they minimize the
casualties. They trank who they can, but... Yep. Yeah, take out who they can't kind of thing.
It's kind of like how Russia did our election this year. I can't let this go, y'all. I'm sorry. No. but yes.
Never forget.
A bloodless coup.
This is the broken, fucked up country we live in now.
Mm-hmm. They weaponized America's racism and sexism.
Yeah.
And it's our Achilles heel. And even now, you still got people who won't accept reality who will still live in that.
Because they're in the Matrix, man. They are.
It's unpleasant.
They are in the system.
And so everything that they don't agree with is just fake news. And now they got a president who'll tell them that it's all bullshit. Ah, God damn it.
Came over here to have fun.
I know. Fucking world.
What else we got?
Let's see.
Oh, I like how gung-ho Zeus is to track down Simon once they make the connection that the bomb is in the kid's school. And when they get to the boat, he's like, fuck there, it's already on the boat. Zeus is like, I'm going to jump. Yes. I can make it.
Yes, that's part of his arc. He went from being an unwilling participant.
Which is a very McLean thing to do. Try. What are you doing, John? Why are you jumping on this fucking boat, John? And then John is the voice of reason. Like, no, it's the cable's there. It's going to slice you in half. And then he pulls the cable from the car and hooks the thing. He's like, we're going to climb down safely, as safely as we can. And then the truck falls and they fall.
Their reaction when that happens is another one of my favorite moments there. We laugh so hard when we see that.
Yeah.
And then the violence in this movie, I mentioned before we started recording, it's so visceral. It works quite a bit.
Watching that one guy actually get cut in half with that cable.
That works so well.
Yeah.
And then all you need to see is both guys pulling this one body facing the same direction. You know what I mean? Because one's got the arms, one's got the legs.
Oh, God. They both should have died in that fall, though. Like, the truck coming down should have pulled them down and sliced them in half because they're on the bottom of the cable. But they happen to be far enough along that they swing and they catch. And then John catches, like, a rail but is pulled back with the same cable.
Uh-huh.
That should have sliced him in half. Like... There's no coming back from that. Well,
I guess
because a truck fell to make that happen.
Maybe the brake was to slow the fall. You know, when he hit the little hill there, it makes it a little more plausible.
And then when they're done, it's like, I'm really glad you talked me out of jumping.
Oh, this movie, man. There's so much to love.
Oh, man. Samuel Jackson is fantastic. A fantastic addition to the Die Hard mythos. I wish he had come back for one of the other ones.
I looked for him in Live Free, even though there's no reason for him to be in there, and no real reason for these guys to be friends afterwards. But you know,
I don't know. I could see them continuing to be friends.
I could see it, but I can, you know, I get that he wasn't in the fourth movie because there's no real reason for McLean to reach out to him or anything. Okay. Not like how they shoehorn Al into the second movie. You know?
It's funny you bring up Al. Have you seen the HBO first look for this? It's on the.
I'm sure
it's on
I
the.
Have.
It's on the Blu-ray.
I'm sure I have.
I started watching it and then.
Doesn't
had to take
he
the
host
out.
It?
Yeah.
Yes, I have seen it a long time.
Yeah,
ago.
Reginald Vell Johnson hosts it, and he's like, "I made a little movie here called Die Hard, and now they're making Die Hard with a Vengeance. Let's go check it out." And then he calls Sam Jackson on the phone, and Sam, what's up? It's like, I think fans are going to be concerned that I'm not in this one. It's like, well, you were a new L.A. cop, and this one's in New York. It doesn't really make sense. Like, yeah, I guess.
Right. And you can tell some bored guy had thought of that because they figured people would look for this dude.
Yeah.
But it's not a package deal.
But then he goes, that's okay. I got my own TV show now. He's real happy about that Urkel show.
Yeah. That I'll eventually be overshadowed in there too.
Yeah. I just thought it was really funny. They tapped Reginald Val Johnson to host Die Hard with a Vengeance First Look.
It's kind of a consolation prize. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. It's a consolation prize because he's not in the movie.
We don't want you in this one, but you know, you can do the HBO First Look.
Yeah, we'll pay you for that.
Can Urkel come?
Only if you can get
Jaleel. No, just me. Yeah. Just me. I'm doing it without Urkel.
It's in the contract that nobody on set could ask him about family matters and shit.
All right. Well, we're going to mention that you have a TV show now and you don't care about the movie. Fine, but I do care. I could be Zeus. Could you imagine Al as the Zeus character?
No. No, because Al's one of those magic ones. He's not even going to lose his temper.
No.
He's cuddly. And Zeus, to their credit, is not a friendly or likable person.
Yeah.
Which is good.
He has flaws, which mm-hmm. is great. But he...
And he doesn't mind voicing
them. Like John McClane, he overcomes his flaws to do what's right.
Yep. Which is why he thought he could jump onto that fucking boat.
I can make it. It's going to cut you in half. Come on. Let's get this cable.
Oh, and I like when they are tied up, like 30s damsel in distress style, tied up to the bomb itself.
Yep.
And he's like, there's no riddle, no code gonna stop this motherfucker. He's like, nope, no magic countdown or anything. You're gonna blow it all up?
No more games.
And he says, didn't I hear you say you didn't even like your brother? I didn't even know that motherfucker.
There's a difference between not liking one's brother and not caring when some Mick cop throws him out of a building.
Yeah, because McClane's like, your brother's an asshole. You got him, you did, you got his number. What a great movie. I mean, and that's probably... Is that the only scene they all have together? It is. Because Zeus has a scene with Simon. And then when McClane gets up to the deck and he sees the real bomb, that's when he gives up. And that's where Simon pops in. Hello, John McClane.
Yeah.
All soothing. And just had to meet him. I have to see you because now I respect you at this point.
Yeah.
But I am going to tie you up to this bomb and blow your ass up.
You are impressive, sir. Yeah.
Yes.
Well done.
Oh, and then he throws him the aspirin. So they pay off the hangover. So he gets it from Simon. Keeps the bottle.
You got any aspirin? I've had a massive fucking hangover, fucking headache all day.
Simon can't help but laugh at that. He just can't help but smile.
He says it's your lucky day, which is true because that's how he ends up tracking him down at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bit coincidental, but not as coincidental as how he does it in the... I just realized how he does it in the alternate ending. It's still the aspirin bottle. But what he does... This is really dumb. He calls the pharmaceutical company that made the aspirin. It's like a German aspirin company. And finds out where that particular bottle was shipped to. And it was shipped to like Nova Scotia.
Right, because they're in Canada or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're not in Canada at the end there. He just somehow traces them from Nova Scotia to wherever they are.
Right, they're in Canada in the real ending. Sorry. Yeah.
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 Or they're about to head north. Mm-hmm. I think they're just outside of town or something.
Right at the border or some shit.
Yeah. But yeah, the bottle stamped with the name of the hotel that they're staying in, or next door to this warehouse with all their shit. So this one mistake, one really dumb mistake that would never happen is what...
And Targo points out, stop toying with him and kill him, Simon.
Yeah.
Because again, everybody's pretty competent and good at their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And Targo sees this is going too far.
And you know, Simon says, okay, let's go ahead and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for Otto's... taking his friend's badge and him happening to know his friend's badge number because they played the lottery
planned it earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Then he, I love that exchange too. You guys catch the lottery last night? My wife buys me two tickets every week. And she always plays the same two numbers. I'm like, honey, why don't you try a different number? They're like, oh yeah, those are my lucky numbers. I got the tickets right here. Boom, bam, bam, boom, bam, boom,
bam. Boom. Blood everywhere, spraying into his face and shit.
Oh yeah, when he kills Otto and he like explodes all over his face.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Fucking violence orgasm right there. It was.
Oh, you know, I love his impression of Holly. Oh, you know, those are my numbers.
And it's like the way McClane acts. I think he thinks he can die in every one of his scenarios. And that's why he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, I think he's convinced he's going to die.
Yeah,
at every turn.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I might as well go for it. I'm definitely going
to
die right now.
Right, because when Zeus tells him to go for it in front of the black guys, he turns it right on.
Yeah.
Librarian said I had a bad day or headache or some shit. I said, man, shut the fuck up. So he tried it. He'll turn it on.
Check their glove compartment. See if they got any aspirin. No, you do it because the guy's got his head blown in.
Yeah. I love to totally just random. When they actually get the cab that they run through Central Park in, when they grab the guy and the Middle Eastern guy, he's like, what the fuck you doing my cab? It cracks me up every time. Hey, what? This movie, you could never watch it sanitized. It's supposed to be violent and profane.
Yeah.
And vulgar. It is. I just love it.
It's everything the original Die Hard. What made the original Die Hard great? Even, you know, and we'll talk about Die Hard 4, like even the theatrical cut of that, the only version I've seen, I like a lot. Even though if it doesn't have the massive gore and profanity, it's still great to me.
Yeah. My only complaint about Live Free, and it's not really a complaint, at this point, the series graduated into that hyper reality where, you know, he's tossing.
Oh, where he's like literally a superhero.
Yeah, he's literally the unkillable stealth bombers and shit. And I'm thinking of that one villain guy who was scamping around like a squirrel and shit. He was great to watch.
Yeah.
But that he's not in the same
fucking
universe.
Fucking monkey.
Exactly. He's not from the same universe as Otto. You know what I mean? Otto's a real world grunt.
The parkour guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Parkour. That's exactly what he's doing.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, I liked it. It was great to watch in theaters.
It's super fun. Yeah.
But it's not McClane's original universe. It's an alternate reality.
We'll get to Die Hard 4.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it in forever, but I love it.
Me either. Now we have to find the unrated version because you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've never seen the unrated version, so I'll have to track it down.
F-bombs galore. And
do you
violence.
Have it? Do you have it on DVD?
I do not.
Okay.
But I can probably download it real quick.
I'm sure I could rent it on Vudu. I bet they have both versions.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway. Is there anything else about this you want to... I like that the Native American cop gives him a quarter to call his wife, but he still calls her collect.
I didn't notice that. He does.
He totally gives him a quarter, and he calls her, I'm going to pocket this quarter.
it's going into his slush fund.
She's still making that Nakatomi movie. She can pay for a collect call.
Yeah. It went to his lush fund. Not a slush fund, but that's where he's going to get his next bottle. I thought he got it from Zeus. Oh, no, Zeus asked Lambert for the quarter.
Yeah.
Fuck that, McClane. He said...
Zeus gives him a quarter at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, Zeus gives him... He's like, fuck, I left Holly on hold. She's going to be really pissed. I'm like, fuck it. Who cares? She'll be fine. Here, call her.
Yeah. My wife is a very stubborn woman.
I told you, man. My wife is a very stubborn woman.
And just like there was no beginning, there's no ending. It just... Credits roll.
Yep.
And they walk... And then Zeus, at the end, he says, she'd have to be to stay married to you. And it's kind of muted. You don't hear it as much under the music. But, like, that's the end. There's no falling action or nothing. I would love to see what happened to these guys next. Because it's so enjoyable to me.
Their whole relationship is a blast.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best buddy cop movies ever. Where... You know, it has that dynamic of them hating each other and coming to respect each other and needing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And to never get another movie with those two is a little bit heartbreaking to me, but it's just magic for what it is.
It really is. And I like when they're in the helicopter. Like, Zeus doesn't even have to be on the helicopter at this point when they fly to go catch Simon at the border. He doesn't need to be there.
No.
But he's there.
I think, he's just in it now.
Yeah.
He wants to see this... taken to its conclusion.
Yeah, he's in the great game now.
He's like,
as Tyrion would say,
you pretended to put a bomb in, is it his kids? It must be like his nephews.
His nephews, yep.
You pretended to put a bomb in the school of my nephews. I'm going to watch you fucking burn.
And you probably instigated destruction of my store.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because he hasn't gone back to the store, but it's definitely been completely destroyed.
Definitely. And
he
I like to think
he
that
can't
maybe
go
wasn't.
Home, really. I mean,
right, until this hits the news and then people
it
will
really
see.
All has to come out what happened.
Yeah. Otherwise, they're going to fuck him up.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids. So he's there and he's invested, laughing with his leg brace and all that shit on. And I liked when McClane asked for a gun and they give him the old service revolver. He's like, what is this? The little six shooter or whatever the fuck that was.
Yeah.
A 38. That's a 38, right? I don't know guns
don't know.
Very well.
I don't know guns very well either.
Can't fucking stand them. It's slightly unbelievable
he had
that he hits
He had
that
a court. Little revolver strapped to his back at the beginning. But I don't know.
Good point.
I don't know what his.
I think he expected more
service
from
gun.
Cops.
I think it's more like a 9mm. He uses through the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I mean at the very end, he uses the gun to shoot down that power cable, and it's one of those old kinds because he's counting the bullets.
Is it the revolver back?
Yeah, it's the revolver.
So maybe he's just been carrying it the whole movie.
But I think he got it from somebody because in the helicopter he asks for a gun and he says, "What is this?" When they hand him that.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he expected better from them. But no, it works fantastically well. I love the smirk on Simon's face when they pull in because he knows, now I finally got you, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And he just pulls up with the big-ass rifle there, the big gun. Still don't got him. And, of course, say hello to your brother. That also works.
Because you expect a yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, and say hello to your brother. Like, cold-blooded John McClane.
Mm-hmm.
And then a yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, just for us. We need it.
Yes, we need it.
We need it.
And then he walks away laughing because he, you know, all the massive loss of life this day. And he's just walking away laughing at the absurdity of it all again.
Yep.
That's what I love about it. And it just cuts right to him laughing because, I don't know, everything just works so well in this movie. Yes. They should just remake it again with the same actor, same everything. Same script, same actor, just update it for today.
That would be really
no
funny.
No CG.
Redo Die Hard with a Vengeance with the exact same cast. And
you got to take Gus Van Sant's idea to the next level.
Yeah, yeah.
Same cast and everything. They're just older now.
No, I mean, we could do a shot-for-shot remake and recast it. It would just be absurd. It'd be really funny.
Man, you lose a lot, though, in recasting on this one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Anything else? I feel like there's more, but
I don't know. There's him surfing on a truck when the aqueduct floods.
Yeah, and that's
floods. One
of the optical illusions.
It's really.
I love the way he does get shot out of that hole, though.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because at this point, it's starting to become comedic. What's happening to him this day?
I thought it was funny that Zeus happens to be there as he
gets
shot out.
I was just about to say that. Yes, he's driving around looking and can just see McClane getting sped out of.
Because he's already gone to Yankee Stadium and back to as far as he's made it up the aqueduct.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to be at that exact point where he sees him shoot out.
I always love the stunt where, like, he has Zeus disable the power steering or something like that.
And yeah, the analog brakes.
Yeah, the brakes. That's what it
does.
Yeah. And he spins that wheel around. That shit works real well.
Yep.
Even now, that car does a total spin.
And he's just out the window.
Boom, yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. Then he crashes into the side of it and takes him. And it's
totally
great.
Works. Any other hotness? I don't want to miss something.
I'm in this shit because some white cop threw some white asshole off a roof.
Some white asshole's brother off a roof.
White asshole's brother.
Not just any old white asshole.
I think he says that Hans is Simon's baby brother. I was like, Alan Rickman must be older than
I can't remember that
Jeremy
part.
Irons.
I thought Simon was the
brother. I thought he said I threw his little brother off a roof.
Oh, yes. Yes, he does. Yep. I threw his little brother off a roof.
So I don't buy that Simon is the older brother.
You don't?
No.
I could see it because he's so more, they're both pretty reserved.
Because even like 10 years later when this movie's made, he still looks younger than Alan Rickman did in Die Hard.
It's the facial hair.
Yeah, it's the beard really ages him.
Yeah.
But
Simon's pretty sleek.
Alan Rickman
Simon
must
actually
have been
kill
like
anybody
40.
In the movie. I don't think he does. Simon never lays a hand on anybody, does he?
Fuck. I was going to say he kills, what's his name? But no, the girl does.
Yep. How interesting. I never thought about it, though. He's completely bloodless in this movie.
Well, I mean, he sets off the bombs.
That's true, but he doesn't directly kill anybody. I guess we got to decide the guilty pleasures at this point.
We might as well move to the end. There's just, like, other random lines I wrote down, like Zeus wanting to keep the gold bar he finds. They ain't going to let you keep the gold. Bitch, you don't know that, or whatever he says. And then he leaves it in the car.
I left the fucking bar. Shit.
He's like, man, that guy was pissed. He's going to feel a lot better when he looks in the back seat. Oh, motherfucker.
That was my gold.
Yeah. But yeah, we can talk about the guilty pleasures of characters in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Mm-hmm. But which the title, I don't quite know where that came. I mean, I get the vengeance part from Simon, but it's just awesome. You know, for no reason. It's just muscular with a vengeance. Not just a regular Die Hard, but with a vengeance.
Yeah, it's not Die Hard 3 or Die Hard Trinity or something weird. It's Die Hard with a Vengeance.
And then, like I said, the words just smashed together on screen.
Yep.
Oh, they just didn't give a fuck. We're going to make a movie, and it's going to be fun as hell, and you'll love it.
Mission accomplished.
I swear. This movie is a pure mission accomplished for me. I actually, because I didn't get a chance to watch it all, I'm going to get somebody who hasn't seen it and watch it today with all my off days here.
Go find someone who's never seen it.
Yeah, because I think my cousin hasn't seen it, so she gets to watch that with me today.
Awesome. Fantastic. I would watch it again, but I should do some homework because Amanda has tomorrow off, so I'm not going to get to do much tomorrow.
Okay.
Pick a character for me. Anyone you want me to tell you their guilty pleasure. I have a good one for you unless you steal it.
What about Katya?
Ooh.
What the hell does she do?
She likes getting fucked.
You know what? The movie reveals that for us. Yes, are absolutely correct.
I mean, she likes getting like tossed around and made to be a submissive.
Yes,
like
she's such a badass.
Yeah, because in real life, she is so stern and hard. And
she has the power to end your life.
But
am I?
But like the real joy of submitting to someone else is giving up that power.
Yep.
And I think that's what she likes. I'll come up with something more. Less obvious.
But, no, that works though because
but she does. She likes that dick, man.
Yeah. So you say she's got the magic dickhead? Okay. She's gonna suck this dickhead.
I want you to do Charlie, the bomb squad guy, the bomb expert.
Charlie, who is very exuberant. What the fuck does Charlie do for fun? Or as his guilty pleasure?
There's a lot of weird ways you could go with it.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Charlie can go a lot of ways. Because he's not very socially adept. Anytime you throw a live bomb at a chair in a police station, so you're a little off.
He was like sexually aroused when he did
that. He was like, just explaining it.
Very cool. Cool stuff.
The actor, I don't know what else he's been in, but I've seen him before, and he acts just like that in other roles.
Yeah, I can't place anything else he's been in, but you're right. I have definitely seen him in other stuff.
Fuck, bro. Charlie stumps me for a second. I was going to give you Walter, but I think Katya is harder because she's got no lines.
Yeah, Katya is really hard. I think Katya, it's interesting that she doesn't speak. Can that play into it?
She sings.
Do you like karaoke?
Yes, she sings. That's exactly it. She doesn't talk, but she'll belt out fucking I Dreamed a Dream like Susan Boyle.
And she's also never been kissed. Right. Likes to be held down and fucked.
While she's singing, she still holds the curved blade and the mic.
So that's what I was thinking with the blade. Mm-hmm. I was like, does she collect like antique weapons? Because there's no reason for her to have like this curved blade thing unless she got it from like 18th century Mongolia. And it took her, it was like a vicious bidding war on eBay. And she's like, go fuck yourself. It's my curved blade.
She stares at it before bed and shit at night.
Yeah, takes it everywhere, which is why she has it on this heist. It's like a safety blanket, security blanket.
My father killed a man and gave this knife to me.
What's her curved blade's name? She would definitely name it. Hector.
Hector?
Hector is thirsty. Nope.
Babushka, because she's
babushka.
Russian. Yes,
babushka.
Little babushka.
Babushka. Yeah.
Let me introduce you to Babushka. It's like Lucille. Hector Babushka. It's Babushka's the last name.
Yeah, yeah.
Esquire.
I also like imagining her, like if she did speak, having like a really high Betty Boop voice. Yes. And like the first time she broke that out in the middle of a mission, Simon was like, yeah, never fucking speak again. you're really lowering our quality here.
She sounds like Harley Quinn from the animated series.
Oh, Mr. J! Mr. S!
Edith Bunker and shit.
Simon, what are we gonna do about these explosives? That could be their guilty pleasure, too. I was like, Katya, stop fucking around. No speaking for the rest of the mission. Oi! She thinks it's hilarious.
Ahoy, matey! Oh, fuck. That's what it is. Poor Katya. There's no topping that one.
Yeah, she's like, on the side, she's an aspiring voice actor. So she's always trying out zany voices on the missions.
During the missions, yeah. Whew. She probably has one-liners, too, just like fucking Horatio from CSI Miami.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Whew, my stomach hurts now.
She does have her sunglasses.
She does. That's why I'm thinking about it. I'm wondering, though. I'm still thinking about Charlie. Is he a volunteer firefighter? He puts out bombs. I mean, he's a bomb expert. Does he put out fires?
Is he like a masked vigilante?
That also might work.
He's like Captain Underpants.
Because I don't get creepy vibes from Charlie. He's a little awkward, but I don't feel like he's doing some crazy shit.
Like yeah, the only thing I thought was like he throws the little paperclip bomb to startle what's her name?
Kowalski
is like maybe he's trying to make something happen there. It's like when she gets a little adrenaline in her blood, she gets super horny for Charlie.
Maybe so.
It's like yeah, we fuck sometimes.
she's got to be distressed.
In order
to see him,
in order for her to climax, she's got to be terrified a little bit.
That's her guilty pleasure
for sure. Yeah.
Oh fuck! What does Charlie do, man? I'm still thinking. I got nothing for this guy yet.
Does he just drink maple syrup from the bottle?
That's how he readily identified it.
Yeah, he's like maple syrup.
He's got a collection of maple syrup on the shelf like this.
This is Vermont. What? Wait. It's Vermont mixed with a little bit of Michigan.
A little bit of Michigan 1984 here.
Yeah. This is definitely an 84 Michigan.
I could see that. The man knows his liquids. Yeah, because I don't want to give him something creepy or weirdly sexual. I feel like I did that last time.
Christmas caroling?
Fuck you, Charlie. I can't think of anything. He's willing to give up his life. He manages his anxiety. You know, he puts the powder on, wipes his brow.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a man who's dedicated. And he knows his shit, and he's willing to lay his life on the line. what's a guy like this do?
What does he do to unwind?
Right. That's what I'm trying to figure out. It's like I said, he doesn't strike me. He's embraced his awkwardness. So he didn't feel like put upon by the others. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. He's not the dweeb or nerd. Or if he is, he embraces it. Charlie's a motivational speaker.
Oh, okay.
In his spare time. That's what he does. Because he's a man perfectly at peace with himself.
I feel like maybe after this, he's a motivational speaker.
He
walks into auditoriums and turns the chair around the wrong way and just like, kids, listen.
After he saw the light staring down.
Once failed to disarm a bomb and it could have been the end of my life. And I realized I've never lived.
I've never lived until that moment. That's our Charlie right there.
I could see it.
And he probably still does a little bit of work with the NYPD, but I could see him taking that act on the road. There we go.
I told my wife I loved her that day. We've been together ever since.
Come on out here, Sergeant Kowalski. Yeah, exactly. He still calls her Sergeant. Yeah. I'm good with that. I'm good without Charlie having a nice, robust career. He's got some YouTube videos out here at this point, you know? Talks people off the ledge.
He doesn't have to go to school to be a motivational speaker. Mm-hmm. He can have a YouTube series. Mm-hmm.
That's all.
All he needs is a green screen and a backwards chair, and he's good to go.
And some e-books.
A bandera.
Yeah, he sold some e-books and shit.
Bandana, that's the word I wanted.
Bandera is also fun. Yeah, I'm okay with this one.
I like it.
Yeah.
What do you want to plug, Ray? Any recommendations, anything you're watching?
I think it did get cut out of the last one, Gargoyles.
I think it did too. Yes, we went on a little bit long with our plug, so Gargoyles. Yeah, it's
Disney's Gargoyles. If you guys haven't seen that, that was the first show I watched that was heavily serialized after, well, not counting soap operas. That's a whole other story. But Gargoyles was the first show that became can't miss TV for me. And I transitioned from Gargoyles in 95, 96, well, from 94 to 96 to Buffy in 97. And then it was off to the races. Now, every show I watch and every movie series like Harry Potter or something like that, they have to have intricate continuity.
Yeah.
I need to be rewarded for paying attention. So that's where we go. And I love callbacks. I love foreshadowing, call forwards, flash forwards. All of the above. So yes, if you guys haven't seen it, Disney's Gargoyles is excellent. Both full seasons are on DVD, but you don't need to worry about the third season at all because the creator wasn't involved and season two ends
changed hands
decently enough.
Yeah.
I still got to bring you those DVDs. That's all I got.
What's your Twitter?
At Moski 1213, Moski 1213, which is my birthday and it's coming up. Should
right,
I put a PayPal
right before
link
the new
in
Star Wars?
It sure is. Yeah, we saw Rogue One last year. Right,
I can't believe. I was thinking of that the other day. I was like, Rogue One was really just was less than a year ago. Yep. It feels like forever ago.
It feels like a while ago, and it wasn't even like super cold. Yes, it was. It was because that's why you had to pick me up.
Yeah, it was.
My fucking heat wasn't working. Yep. Yes, it was.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You're right. It was winter.
Mm-hmm.
But let's wrap up so I don't have to edit too much out of this one. I'll recommend the third season of Rick and Morty. I just finished that. And it's amazing.
I actually haven't seen any of that show either.
Oh, it's so good, man. Three seasons in, so I think it qualifies for you to get
it has made the cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus it's animated, and those can be canceled and resurrected, so it's not quite the same with animation.
Yeah, and it has a really strong following, and it's just getting better, so I would highly recommend Rick and Morty. The third season's the best of the three seasons. Just incredible stuff. So our Twitter is at quote guilty. My Twitter is at quote or no at play_architect. You can find us at facebook.com/quoteunquoteguilty. Email us at quoteunquoteguilty@gmail.com or contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/wordsalad, where you'll get access to exclusive Patreon only content from myself and the other Word Salad hosts, and other people that we just bring in for fun. Yeah. So.
Always a pleasure, guys. By now, you should be bobbing your head to Summer in the City, so I'm not going to interrupt that at all. Just have a great one.
Then this is where I pull the rug out from under you and throw
some other shit. It's like Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Use the song from
and
the end of the other
Die Hard. And a partridge in a pear tree.
No, you got to use Let It Snow from the other two Die Hards.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That they should not have used gratuitously in the second movie.
Yeah,
but,
exact same song that ends the two movies.
So you pull the fucking rug out from under me at the end there.
All right, well, we'll see what happens right now.
Hot town, summer in the city. Back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead. Walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But tonight it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright.
This podcast is a Word Salad production. Wonky oranges, righteous dragons.
Okay, done. Now the podcast is ending. Okay.
Meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But tonight it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on, come on, and dance on.